This is News and Notes. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, our regulars give the last word on Joe Biden. We take a look at a new study that probes the minds of African-American youth. And as Super Bowl weekend gets underway, we'll talk tailgating and team favorites. With me to talk about all of this, Joe Davidson, an editor at The Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and they're joining us from Studio 3A in Washington. And Nat Irvin, columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal, joins us from member station WFDD Radio in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome, each of you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Hello, Michelle.
And we talked about this at the top of today's program, so I wanted to get your take on the Biden-Obama remarks. And Professor Irvin, big oops, little oops.
Oh, well, I would say this. I'll go on the record now and say that Joe Biden will not only will he not become president of the United States, but he will not receive the Democratic nomination, and he will only have himself to blame. The problem with Joe Biden is this, is that to run for president requires boring, it's a very boring, tedious kind of thing. You have to tell the same jokes over and over again. You have to tell the same stories over and over again, and you have to tell them in front of your staff. The same people have to watch you doing this. Joe Biden is not that kind of a person. He likes excitement. He likes to tell a different kind of story. And what happens when you tell a different kind of story? You get off message. And so Joe Biden mm-hmm. finds himself off message, and now he is done because he's in a time when we're in the YouTube phenomenon. And I'm afraid that it just does not fit his style. Too bad.
Joe Davidson, we talked in the last segment about how Joe Biden has handled this. What do you think about the way Barack Obama has handled this? I mean, he first said he didn't take the remark personally, but then he issued a more pointed statement saying, you know, yeah, I'm not personally offended, but this is historically inaccurate. He seemed to sort of toughen up not to overinterpret, but perhaps as he saw that this issue gained traction. So what do you think about the way he's handling this?
Well, I think he was correct to point out the historical inaccuracy of Joe Biden's comment, because it is perhaps more of a slap against the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, the Shirley Chisholms, who have run for president before, than it is against Barack Obama. And so I think that his initial statement he perhaps thought was a bit too mild, perhaps a bit too noncommittal on this particular subject, which was gaining more and more energy in the press. And so perhaps he felt he had to come out and say something a bit more pointed, but still not condemning too harshly his Senate colleague.
Professor Berry?
I think that Barack Obama did just fine, and all that happened was that somebody in the campaign pulled his coat and said, man, that first statement was too weak. And, he was slamming these people, and you need to say something. And so they issued another statement, which was the right thing to do. As far as Senator Biden is concerned, he should never have been running for president in the first place. The last time he ran, he blew up over the allegations that he had passages from somebody else's speech in his speech, and he in fact admitted it. As I recall, he has a 10-year for his own constituency in Wilmington, which has large numbers of African Americans who have views about race and other things. It shows that he has insensitivity on this whole front, and he meant exactly what he said. All the parsing of what he said and the deconstruction of what he said, he meant what he said. He is a black guy who is articulate, and he's the kind of guy white folks will like and feel comfortable with because of all the places he's been, and that's the kind of black guy he is. And Jesse and Sharpton and even Shirley Chisholm, he probably didn't even remember Shirley Chisholm because he wouldn't remember that. That's the kind of guy Biden is. Jesse, he was thinking. Al Sharpton, he was thinking.
Carol
Moseley
Braun.
Frightened some white people.
That's
right. Carol Moseley Braun, he forgot about, too.
Well, how about, but Professor Berry, pick up on that point. I mean, could this be a problem for Senator Obama in the sense that Biden unwittingly tapped into something that may be an issue, which is the more acceptable you are to whites, the less appealing you are to some African Americans who wonder that if you're that acceptable to the kind of the white majority, perhaps you really don't have the interests of the black community close to your heart. Is that a problem?
Well, it could be a problem, but it doesn't have to be. There is a suspicion always, a skepticism, and maybe we should look closely at this guy. But I think when they find out what he has done, what his record is, what he's done in Chicago, what he's done with his life and his commitments, that'll be okay. It's just people don't know him very well now. It could be a problem, but it doesn't have to be a problem.
Professor Everett, I'd ask you if same question I asked the earlier panel, which is this is this in a way a potential problem for Democrats on the whole, in that it stimulates kind of feelings around the fact that Democrats are so PC about race, so sensitive about race, that it kind of opens the door for the Republican critique that they have more of the interests of the whole the whole country at heart rather than the Democrats, who are so factionalized and so interest group driven, according to kind of the narrative that Republicans sometimes use to criticize Democrats?
Well, I think, you know, that might be true some other time. But right now, the country as a whole, when you look at polls, 70-75% of this country is concerned about what happens on a foreign policy, specifically with Iraq. So and the other thing is, Michelle, it's very early in this whole presidential cycle. I don't know how many days it is, but, this campaign is forever. I can understand your point. I just don't think that right now Biden is all that important. His campaign is not going to go anywhere. The matters of race, ethnicity will be with us always, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, and that's simply because of the demographic future of this country.
Are we going to be talking about this a year from now? A month from now?
You know, I kind of doubt it. No. I mean, I remember, Jesse Jackson reminded us that Jesse Jackson stayed in the race longer than Joe Biden did last time. And so I think a year from now, this will probably just be political history.
Not to belabor the point, but I kind of wonder, is part of the and Joe, maybe you want to take this, is part of the issue of exactly that what Biden said was so irritating for all the reasons we've already discussed this morning, or is it part of it because it fits into a narrative? I mean, it fits into a bigger narrative that he just doesn't get it, or he just can't keep control over what he has to say, or that mainstream Democrats in general just sort of can't figure out how to deal with this up and coming generation of leaders.
Well, I do think there is some of that on the larger scale among Democrats and Republicans as well, for that matter. But as it relates to Biden, this remark did remind me of a comment he made in November. He was speaking to some businessmen in South Carolina, and he said that the only reason his home state of Delaware, which he reminded them was a slave state, didn't fought on the side of the North is because the people in Delaware couldn't figure out how to get to the South, because there are a couple of states in the way, as he put it. And so some commentators at the time said he was trying to release his inner Bubba, in other words, an attempt to appeal to the white voters, in this case in South Carolina, which of course is an important primary in the political process. And so I think that you can look at it both on this kind of macro level, what it means for Democrats and perhaps the political process as a whole, but also, is this just another in a continuing series of comments from Joe Biden in this particular area?
Joe Biden,
you're listening to.
Shut up.
I'm sorry, excuse me, Professor. You're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Michelle Martin. In case you're just tuning in, with me on today's roundtable are Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post; Dr. Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania; and Nat Irvin, columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. Let's move on. Talk about the Black Youth Project. Now, this is a survey that solicited the views of 1,600 teens. They were Black, Latino, and white, in an effort to really dig down into the attitudes of African-American youth today. Here's Lauren Guy, one of the young people interviewed on the study.
The survey was very valuable. It gave Black youth a voice. It asked the people who most people are talking about what they think. You can't talk about Black youth without talking to Black youth, and I think that's something the leaders of this country tend to try to do, and we fail.
Dr. Berry, I know you've had a chance to review sort of some of the findings, and I'm just curious to know what leapt out at you. One of the things that leapt out at me was that Black youth, of course, as we know, are heavy consumers of rap music, but majorities find it too violent, too sexual, and degrading to Black women. And isn't there a contradiction there? You know, the kids, they love it, but they hate it at the same time?
Yeah, what they're telling us is that, yes, they love the music, but they do understand all the critiques about it. And they do understand that it does do all these things in terms of demeaning women, that they got that message. They still like it. They would like the music if it were changed, and they even like the parts that are not like that. So that stuck out. But the other thing that stuck out for me was, in the first place, black youth seem to believe clearly that race and discrimination are still major problems for African Americans, and that this happens at the same time that you have white students who they encounter in school and where they are who don't believe that race is a problem and even do silly things to insult black people. The other thing that struck me was that black youth believe that there should be sex education and condom use and that they practice safer sex, and that correlates with the idea that the black teenage pregnancy rate has been going down now for about 10-15 years and at a higher rate than the white teen pregnancy rate. So I found this all very illuminating, especially when you compare what black youth think with what Latino and white youth think, and the fact that all youth are together as we go through this racial experience in the world. So I found it very illuminating.
Professor Irvin, what jumped out at you?
Well, Mary captured one aspect of which, let me summarize it this way. A very strong sense of self-determination, recognizing that challenges still remain with us when it comes to the role that race plays in society. I thought that the very strong message, and I've seen this in other surveys as well, that young black people are beginning to become concerned about their image, not only as it is projected through these images that we see through the videos, but how this image is projecting the image of black people worldwide. So there's some concern there. And also, too, it represents an opportunity, I think, for the entertainment industry and for other educational institutions to be able to address this issue by creating new images, new sounds, new opportunities for education. You know, the fact is, half of black America, more than half of black America, actually born since 1964, the civil rights passage of the civil rights movement legislation, and that in fact, as we move forward, we're going to have more and more black America having been born since 1974, 1975. So we're recreating who we're going to be in the future, and it represents an opportunity to build on some real strengths, I think.
Joe Davidson, I was struck by what a high opinion these kids had about the political process. They, you know, a large majority of youth believe that they can make a difference by participating in politics. 79% of black and white youth and 77% of Latino youth said they felt that way. And they also talked about the sense of efficacy they had around using their spending to support things they support. Large numbers of kids said that they participated in what they called a boycott in the last 12 months, saying that they, you know, specifically chosen to purchase certain products because they liked a company's social or political values. So on the one hand, that seems like they had a real sort of sense of efficacy. On the other hand, kids were really down on their quality of their education, felt that they were not getting the education that they deserved. How do you put all that together, Joe Davidson?
Well, I think that it tells us that perhaps some of these kids are doing much more thinking than we realize. I think we tend to lump the hip hop generation and the teens, today's teens, into the category of folks who like gangster rap and things like this. And I think that we talk a lot about kids, we write a lot about them, we read a lot about them, but sometimes I don't think we actually talk to them, we don't actually listen to them, and consequently we may not actually know them. One thing I found interesting, and this is a bit of a side, when I was trying to look up some material on this, I came across a story about this study in today's Turkish Daily News. So it tells me that people around the world are interested
Absolutely.
In what black youth think, and perhaps those of us in this country need to get a better idea of exactly what's on their minds.
I think it is an important study, and we're actually going to talk more about it on the program on Mondays. We have just a couple of minutes left, and I apologize in advance, but it is 2 days from the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. Have to talk about the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Are you having a Super Bowl party, Michelle?
You know, I am. I'm sorry. Okay. I really am. Are you coming?
Are we coming?
Now okay. I am, now that I know.
So this is a good opportunity to help us plan the menu. You know that tailgating has been banned from the Super Bowl for the last 5 years as a security precaution in the wake of 9/11. But I think we should have our own fantasy tailgate. So what's on the menu, Dr. Barry, for your fantasy tailgate?
Buffalo chicken wings.
Okay, that's a classic. A classic. The conservative side of Dr. Barry's coming out. Joe Davidson, what's on the menu for your fantasy tailgate?
Fresh, moist German chocolate cake.
Wow.
Are you kidding me?
Wow. No,
listen,
man.
I'm having ribs.
Ribs is a very broad category.
Oh, well, I can tell you, pork ribs.
Professor Irvin, we
smoked.
Need to focus. Okay.
Pork ribs smoked.
Wow, okay.
Absolutely.
But what kind of sauce? Is it the mustard-based, the tomato?
Oh, no, I have my own original. I have my own original sauce, which I obviously can't share here because, it's copyrighted here. But you all are all welcome.
But no side dishes here. I'm not hearing any side dishes.
Oh, sure, potato salad. Potato salad, baked beans, all the corn on the cob, all the stuff you're supposed to have when you're trying to raise your cholesterol.
Okay, yes. Dr. Barry, the side dishes. You help us out. Okay.
Collard greens.
With hog joel.
What, can you share your recipe, or is it another one of these copyrighted?
I said with hog joel. You know what hog joel is? You don't know what hog joel is.
Well, I'm a smoked turkey girl, so I can't, I have to move into the
You know, I like
smoked
turkey
scenario.
And greens. You know, smoked turkey can really do
that
wonders
is good.
For greens, you know? Doesn't
Absolutely.
Have to be, doesn't have to be pork.
I'm sorry, can I reveal that I can put my foot in some greens? I don't want to brag, but
look out.
I can put my foot in some greens. And pound cake, I do...
Pound
I'm sorry,
cake.
I feel I have to share with Look you that out. I have a stellar pound cake recipe. Okay, I can't let you go without without understanding which team you're pulling for, Dr. Barry.
The Tennessee Titans.
Well, that's going to be kind of difficult.
I know that everyone's probably...
She's thinking about
the future. I think we can all safely predict that the team with the African-American coach is going to win.
Right.
So,
that'll be
because
great.
Both coaches are African... Dr. Barry, I'm going to have to take you aside and share some football knowledge with you later. Joe Davidson, who are you rooting for? Bears or Colts?
The Colts. Mainly because I want Tony Dungy to win because he's been around for so long, and I think it's his turn.
I'm with Joe. Tony Dungy. I love Lovey, but Tony's been there longer. I'm with him. I want him to pull through.
Okay. Nat Irvin, columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. He joined us from member station WFDD Radio in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Looking for those ribs. Also with us, Mary Frances Barry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post, joining us from Studio 3A in Washington. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
36 words. 36 words.